Hello and welcome to the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. My guest on today's podcast is a computer scientist and educational technologist, Emmanuel Roche. Emmanuel has more than 35 years of experience learning Chinese. He began his Mandarin learning odyssey in the late 80s, studying the language at university, but he quickly became frustrated at how inefficient teaching and learning methods were at the time. Most of his classmates ended up giving up, but Emmanuel didn't. Instead, he developed a lifelong passion for Chinese, using his background in computer science to create technological solutions and make Mandarin acquisition a more efficient process. In recent years, he's created an app called Full Chinese, which helps learners reach native level proficiency in Chinese reading. It's used by learners around the world and has even been integrated into Chinese studies programs at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. I chatted to Emmanuel about his challenges learning Chinese, the story behind his Full Chinese app, and why he's trying to bridge the gap between academic linguists and language learners. Okay, so Emmanuel, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Misha. That's such a pleasure. I mean, I always love talking about learning Chinese.
You began learning Chinese in 1987, and we recently had a podcast episode where we had a guest talking about the history of language learning and how people used to learn Chinese in the past. One of the things that came up was that all the technological advances that have happened in the last two or three decades, which I know you've been very much involved in terms of language learning. But take us back to 1987. What was it like learning Chinese back then?
Well, I mean, the huge difference is dictionaries, paper dictionaries. I remember spending a lot of time looking at dictionaries. So you had each character, you would have to count the strokes, find the dictionary, that would take forever. So that was very slow to actually go through text. And the lack of resources also. You had really to buy a tape to hear some audio and have one book, two books. So it's, I mean, nothing compared with having access to infinite number of YouTube resources, for instance. But not everything is progress. That's so interesting in language learning, is that not everything necessarily goes better. And one of the big thing is pinyin. So I started with pinyin, but it's not the ideal thing for foreigners.
Just to sort of set the scene a little bit. So at this time, when you first started learning, were you doing Chinese studies as your undergraduate degree at that time? Or
yeah, I was in a university. I was doing something completely different. I was doing math and computer science. And I just took Chinese because it sounded like fun and hard, but not very useful at the time. It ended up becoming a passion. But one other thing I observed is that, which is still the case now, is a lot of people start and very few people continue. So we started, I remember, like 45 at the beginning. And after 2 years, we are only four of us. And this is true in many, many programs, unfortunately, because Chinese is hard. But what interests me about your question is that, like, for instance, there is a professor, Perry Link, who was professor at Princeton, I think, yeah. And I met him once, and they were using not pinyin, but something called Guoyu Luomat Search. Mm. I don't know if you heard of it. So Guoyu. And the interesting thing there is that the tones are not accents, like in pinyin, they are written as vowels. So you cannot avoid it. The problem with pinyin, right, is redesigned for Chinese learners, and they know the tones. Like 4 years old, 5 years old, who start kindergarten and start learning the first character, they start pinyin. I mean, if they know one thing, is the tones. And they say they can have some consonants not exactly right, and they don't know characters, obviously, but they know the tones. Whereas we are exactly the opposite. We don't know the tones. And Guoyu, like, forces you to, you cannot escape it. You cannot write anything if you don't know the tones.
You can't escape it because the tones are inbuilt into the system rather than kind of added on as an extra marker, like as an accent marker,
Exactly. And in pinyin, your eye can be trained to ignore the markers, actually.
That's exactly what happened to me and many others. Like it just kind of gets you stuck in this mindset of just thinking, you know, tones are just this kind of optional add-on that you can ignore if you want and just like read it like it was it's written in Roman script.
Yeah, that's correct. It's amazing to hear like young Chinese kids how the tones are very pronounced. And often I thought I love to have a Chinese kid as a teacher because like you cannot escape the tones. It's interesting to see that language learning is not necessarily only progress. I mean, the huge difference is technology and the ability. I mean, you can translate anything, you can pronounce anything automatically, and you have these huge resources. I mean, that cannot be compared with what we had. But it's not every technique is remembered. It's the same thing, actually, if you, I don't know if you know, but the IPR originally was designed by like a collaboration between French teachers teaching English in France and English teachers teaching French in England, in Britain. And basically, my grandfather told me that when he learned English, the first year was only IPA, no spelling allowed. But this is lost. A century later, it's lost. So the method of teaching a century later is not necessarily better. In many cases, actually, not as good as it was.
Just for any listeners who might not know what IPA is, so you're talking about the International Phonetics Alphabet.
Writing words exactly as they are pronounced, rather than the normal spelling that everybody is used to. So, I mean, the word the would not be written T-H-E, it would be written special symbol and E.
Yeah, well, that's kind of gone out of fashion in terms of language education in a lot of ways. I mean, nowadays, pronunciation is almost seen as an optional extra, an add-on.
Yes.
I wanted to quote one of the things that I've read that you've written about your early experiences of learning Chinese, which was that you said those early days of learning Chinese in the 80s was like putting gas in an engine and getting back 1% efficiency. Tell us a bit more about what you meant by that.
Yeah, so the reason why I started to think about technology to help learning is that I was feeling that I was wasting so much time. I wanted to be able to reach the level I wish I could read novels. I wasn't making any progress. I couldn't reach that goal. I didn't see how that goal was reachable. So the hours I spent, I thought I forgot most of it. I didn't understand. And I think it's a frustration. It's why people give up languages also, is that you put some work and you don't see results. You don't see progress, or you see progress that's not solid. And the main problem I saw is that I was not understanding completely what I was reading because the effort was too great, right? If you get a new sentence and you get five new words in it and you need to look up each word in the dictionary, then you are not done. You still need to look at what that words mean in that context. You need to find other example of that word. So it could take you half an hour to go through one sentence to really understanding. And so it's just too much work. So what you do is you skip of it. So you understand the sentence, you get a few new words, but you understand half of it. And what I think the problem is, in order to memorization is actually 80% understanding and only 20% memory. So you really need to understand completely a sentence, every word, how they are built. I just didn't have any tool to do that at the time. I mean, now there are tools available. I mean, I'm doing one with an app called Full Chinese, but other people are doing that also. And so that's a different landscape. But that's what I meant. I mean, I wasn't, so as you can hear, I'm not an English native speaker, so, and my mother tongue is French. And but I was in English, I can read literature, news, etc., as if it was French. I don't remember which language I read it in. But for Chinese, I thought this is unreachable. But that was my goal. I wanted to be able to read novels and news. And I was not progressing there just because it was too hard and not enough tools to understand really every sentence that I was reading.
I had similar experiences at first. I mean, I think what you're alluding to is kind of this concept of comprehensible input and the importance of being able to understand the messages that you're receiving. And if you don't have that concept, as I didn't when I first started learning Chinese, then everything just seems like this insurmountable mountain of information. How on earth? I don't have enough time in a lifetime to kind of take all of this in. That's how it kind of feels. And that all changed for me as well when I discovered kind of comprehensible input. And also another concept that I know both of us are very keen on, which is sentence mining. So on this concept of sentence mining, which is collecting example sentences, you know, drilling example sentences and internalizing the structures within those and the grammar within those. Tell us more about how you discovered this.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. So I came from a different direction than traditional learners. I was doing also at the time, I was doing a PhD in computational linguistics. So trying to understand syntax and how you can make computers understanding. My PhD advisor was Maurice Gross, who is one of the great linguists of the 20th century, passed away in 2001. But his view is that in order to describe language, you need to describe it through simple sentences. So words don't really make sense by themselves. What really is the unit of meaning are short sentences. the sentences that you can not break down further. I mean, if you say something and something, you can like take the left part, the first part, and that's one sentence. But some sentences you cannot break down, and that's called the simple sentences. And that's why I was coming from. Say, okay, this in order to learn a language, you actually need to learn short sentences. And then I realized also that you have frozen expressions are expressions that you would say without thinking about what they mean, like to kick the bucket, for instance. You know thousands, actually tens of thousands of those, and you may have only heard them once, and you don't understand what they mean. And the words in it may actually be old. And I realized that by remembering a line from the Red Riding Hood in French. And there was a sentence I remembered 30 years later, and in that there was four words, I didn't understand three of them, but I still understand it perfectly. So I think the brain is tuned to understanding these sounds of this length, basically something that you can say in one breath, more or less. And so by learning sentences rather than words, you have a plus of having the meaning of a word immediately, because if you don't understand the sentence, then the word is meaningless. But also you have the amount of memory that you... of energy that you need to put to remember a sentence is actually lower than if you had to remember one single word in it. It's easier for your brain to remember a sentence than it is to remember a word. And I've listened to some of your videos, and I agree completely with what you say. I mean, once you have sentences, you can actually use a sentence rather than a word and then speak at a natural speed. And then I discovered after a while that sentence mining has been a thing in the language learning community. And that's actually very interesting, because I've been working in the past 8 years with professors of Chinese in different universities. In particular, I've been collaborating with Chen Tong Laoshi at MIT for 8 years now. There is a difference between the teaching community in academia and the learning community, which you are part of. And there is very little communication between both. So sentence mining, for instance, is not known in the academic world, because it's a completely something that has been grown organically. And for me, from a linguistic perspective, it's very interesting, because it doesn't work just as a trick. It works because it's a fundamental aspect of language itself. I mean, that's how part of language is built. That's why it works. Right. And it's amazing that without any linguistic theory behind it, it was rediscovered, like this fundamental aspect, as a pragmatic thing, as the way people discover it's much easier to remember things. It's much more efficient. That's fascinating how this evolved in completely two different parallel tracks.
Yeah, because I mean, this was something that I was very interested to learn from you when we first started discussing these things online, when we connected on Twitter a couple of years ago. And basically, I discovered sentence mining from, as you say, the perspective of being part of the language learning community and just looking for practical, good ways of learning Chinese that are effective. And I had no idea, as you then informed me later, that this actually has scientific backing, that the idea that you shouldn't just take words, individual words, as the units of the language and then try and put them together to concoct sentences yourself. You should take whole phrases and try and internalize whole phrases and example sentences, and instead target the language at that level. And that there's actually like scientific backing to that underpins these ideas as well. That was something else I didn't know about before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. People agree it's true for verbs in general, but they don't realize that it's true for everything. It's true for nouns, adjectives, adverbs. Even a noun, you need to have a sentence to figure out what it means. And if a word has different meaning, then you need to have multiple sentences for it. And the complexity for the most frequent words are the most complex, the harder to learn, actually. So if you take the verb to take, to make, to give, to be, to have, these are extremely complex phenomena. These are very hard to learn for non-native speakers because they cover so much ground. Whereas what you think of as a complex word, which may be the name of a disease, is actually very simple. It just has one meaning very clearly defined. So the sentences also allows you to breakdown when you have a word with many meanings, to have sample sentences for each. And if you don't have that, then you stumble on that word.
I want to kind of ask a little bit more about this disconnect that you described earlier, where you were saying that there's a kind of disconnect between the language learning community and the academic community of in linguistics and also, you know, Chinese studies courses and the way that Chinese tends to be taught. What do you think is at the root of this disconnect?
It's an open question. That's what I've been doing in the past 8 years, try to bridge that gap. I have some elements of answer. First, it's very hard to change academic programs. You have to measure progress in terms of number of words. And teachers cannot just invent their own program in universities. They have to sit together and they can choose some of their material, but overall, they have to follow a path. They are creative, of course, but it's very hard to be completely disruptive, to say, I'm going to do something completely different. So nobody can say, for instance, okay, next semester, I will do only tones. Somebody will say, okay, what are you doing? You're and then people will think, okay, my kids are going to fall behind if I just do that. So there is some kind of fear embedded. There is also a more intrinsic problem, which is the level of motivation. I mean, if you are an active learner and you are super self-motivated, it's very different than if you have children or young adults that are maybe motivated in some ways, but I mean, not as much as somebody who is really self-motivated. The most important reason, I think, is fear of changing. It's changing very slowly. I remember a conference in which an extreme case of that. It was a Chinese teacher conference, and there was a Korean professor who was teaching Chinese. And he said they were still using a book was talking a lot about horses, how to take care of horses. Say, why is that? Because the first edition was published during the Yuan dynasty, like in the 13th century. So yeah, but we have a new edition now in which they speak about visiting Beijing. And yes, that sounds interesting, except it was visiting Beijing in the Ming dynasty. So that's an extreme case of not moving very fast, but it's still true. It's hard to change things.
I wonder whether there's also an element of Chinese culture involved in this, which is that, like, in Chinese culture, if anybody's ever studied, like, in a Chinese context, you'll find quite quickly that there's much less of a culture of students questioning, disagreeing potentially with the teacher. And so this idea that you could maybe learn from the students, the people, the learners, maybe, like, less popular, maybe less influential within that space.
Yeah, that's interesting, but I don't really think so for two reasons. One is you see, observe that for every language being taught, like the way French is taught in the US, for instance, it has the same problem. So it's not really language dependent. And then I see, I meet a lot of teachers, of Chinese teacher of Chinese in the US, and they are very good at trying to engage students. So at least the one I see in the US and sometime in China, they are very engaging. So it's more language teaching community problem, I would say. There is an aspect also of these guys are not professional, right? You're learners, but you haven't studied the pedagogy. You haven't done a master in or maybe a PhD there. So maybe they don't look at you credibly. And then they say, okay, that's interesting, but I don't see any way that I could use that in my classroom also. So, for instance, you already mentioned the importance of tones. One thing I would love to see, for instance, in teaching Chinese in universities or high schools is some kind of fractional teaching. So you cannot do everything at the same time all the time. So why not have, for instance, 2 months in which basically you only do tones? And the way you do it is you read aloud, but being aware of every tone of every character you read, which means probably reading below your level. You go back to 2 levels below and you try to do that. And that would be usually beneficial. But doing something like that is more akin to coaching. Like if you have a tennis coach, they watch their player and say, okay, you have a weakness there. We are going to spend 2 months working on that. So that's something that a teacher who has 20 students has a hard time doing.
Well, that would be so beneficial, I think, actually. Yeah. Because I've studied in, you know, advanced Chinese classrooms, and the typical pattern tends to be, you know, very advanced reading skills, but like kind of atonal. So people who have kind of breezed past, like ignoring the tones, as we mentioned earlier, kind of reading pinyin at the start without just treating the tones as an optional add-on and then introducing characters but kind of skipping the tones and never quite going back in the way that you suggested, and like reading at a slower pace to try and get the tones correct, which I kind of did do. And you only really need to do it for, you know, a couple of months. And within a few weeks, a couple of months, like, you'll notice a big difference of your ability to kind of just internalize the tones correctly. I want to talk about your projects in more recent times. Moving on from the 80s when you were studying Chinese, you then went on to, in the last two decades or so, you've been working to develop technologies which can advance Chinese learning. And this, in particular, you've developed your Full Chinese app. Can you tell us a bit more about what the Full Chinese project is about?
Yeah, so it was really at the beginning, the target audience was myself. I say I was so frustrated by the how slow I was moving forward. And it's a combination. So it's targeted towards intermediate learners who want to achieve fluency. How can you make that process more efficient? Mm-hmm. So it assumes that you are motivated. So, for instance, contrary to an app like Duolingo, which has really a lot of gamification to engage beginners, I assume you have a motivation, and what I want to provide is tool to help you progress. And then I started collaborating with a teacher at MIT, Chen Tong Laoshi, and he produced content. I put the content into the app, and the goal was really to invert the classroom. One of the problems of learning new text is that you cannot learn new words during the class time. Your brain is too busy, it's practically impossible. The ideal thing is that you learn the words before, and during class time it's being reinforced. So my goal was to say, as you said, like the texts that people study are pretty advanced and they are very hard. And if you understand only 70% of it, you are going to waste the whole thing. So how can you have a tool that helps you get new content and learn that content better, and ideally to help students know the text, understand every sentence, more or less every word, at least 95% of it, before they go to the classroom. During the class time, the teacher is talking a lot, the students are talking a lot. It's very good to reinforce, it's very bad to learn.
So that's another
problem also that you mentioned is you mentioned attending classes in which the reading level was very advanced. One of the problem of classes is typically the level at which the texts are is above what it should be. It should be one level below, because you don't progress if the text is too hard. You don't progress as fast. And you mentioned a comprehensible input, and the goal is to have like 98 texts that you understand at 98%. But as you know, in Chinese, I never found text that I could understand at 98%. It was always below that. So where do I find the input? So how do you go over that problem? So I now have a tool in which I have a text. I can look up every meaning of every word, every sentence. I can flag anything. I can work on it. And what I wanted to do is optimize the process. So rather than spending, if I want to understand that word in a different context, if it takes me 10 seconds, it's too slow. I want to do it in 2 seconds. So if I can do it in 2 seconds, then half an hour is extremely efficient. So I look at it like you would say building a construction plant for a car, how to make every step efficient. So because if you make every step efficient, then you learn faster, and that's where you get the motivation. There is no stronger than motivation than the feeling of having learned. And it's really a feeling. It's not really something you can really measure. I mean, teachers have to measure it because that's the way it's designed. But really, for yourself, you have to have a feeling that you are progressing. So that was this attempt to solve through technology the efficiency of learning. And if you can make it more efficient, if you can absorb new content much faster, simple content and hard content, then you can progress much more naturally. And it's I see it both as a self-study tool, something that you can use outside of the classroom, but also it was designed, how can you design it so that it works in a classroom such that it doesn't disrupt the teacher classes? So what the teacher sees is nothing different is happening during the classroom. The only difference is that students come in more prepared. And then the benefit, the students are much more happy. If you go to a classroom and you don't understand anything, it's extremely depressing. If you have the time, if you can put an hour before and you understand most, I mean, a big part of it, then it's a completely different
experience. Yeah, absolutely. So with the full Chinese app then, you said that it's both for, initially it was designed for people who are on courses, but you can also upload your own content, presumably, as well.
Yeah, you can upload your own content, paste anything. You can actually, any YouTube video which has transcript, you can just post the URL there. So we have tons of content. There is, I mean, you ask what's the difference from my early years and now. So for instance, I'm following a channel. There is a YouTube channel of somebody interviewing a Chinese immigrant in Canada. And the guy is very good. People talk a lot about their life in China, their decision why they wanted to immigrate, I mean, what they do here in Canada. And the level of language, I mean, it's an hour of talk. It's natural talk, but it's not just barely chat. They are talking about important things for them. And we can, so in the app, you can just put the URL, we import the transcript, we translate the transcript, we have a meaning of every word. So that's your study material now. So now you have somebody real in front of you that talks about real things, and you can study that. And then the gratification of understanding, so it's a 1 hour thing, but even if you understand 5 minutes of it, after you spend half an hour, you study the words you don't know, you have access to everything, and then you re-listen to a person and you understand this person for 5 minutes as if you really understood everything, that's incredibly gratifying. Yeah, so you can import all this content. It's still input, but it's input for many sources, and we have the ability to do other things at the same time. You still need to do quizzes, so you can flag things and quiz yourself on it, and then you can quiz yourself on sentences. You need to have, there is a process. What we have worked over the past few years is how to optimize that process. You get new text, a new YouTube video or whatever. You have to understand part of it really deeply, not necessarily the whole thing, but part of it, every word in the context of a sentence. And then it becomes your study material. And one of the big things we are trying to solve also in academia is there is one depressing feel is at the end of a semester, you say, okay, I probably forgot the text from the first week, right? So if you think that you, as you progress, you also forgot what you learned, it's pretty depressing. But if you really master input, at the end of a semester, you can just reread once everything that you have read, and it refreshes immediately.
Fantastic. So where can people find your app for those listening?
Yeah, so it's on the App Store, Android and Apple Store, just full Chinese, one word. And it's there. It's also, you can Google it. We have a website for it. But
brilliant. And we can also put a link on in the description for anybody who wants to click on that to the website where you can find more information and download the app as well. So finally, just to finish off then, what plans do you have for the future in terms of your Chinese learning or app development, technology development?
Yeah, so Chinese learning, it never stops. I don't know if you know the joke from Jesuit missionaries, they say, how long does it take to learn Chinese? And the answer was one lifetime plus 3 days. And so I'm still... So what I'm trying to do, because I'm doing other things, I'm not a professional Chinese learner. I don't do only that. So how can you keep learning Chinese in your new situation? I think my way to do it is... First, do a minimum every day, just 5-10 minutes, just not to lose it. And then from choose a month or two in which really push something. So for instance, during COVID, what I did is I said, okay, I want to relook at the 3,600 most common characters. And that's what I did for 3 months, and that helped me pass a level. So you can, I think for people out there who are maybe learning a few months and then not learning, should not give up. You can, if you can keep a minimum and then from time to time push harder, that's a way to progress.
Fantastic. Okay, well, once again, Emmanuel, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today.
Michel, it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter. Run by me and my friend Will Hart, we share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.